Hallo zusammen, schön, dass ihr wieder bei einer neuen Podcast-Interview-Folge dabei seid. Diese wird auf Englisch sein, da ich heute meinen ersten internationalen und männlichen Gast vor mir sitzen habe, nämlich ehemaliger CrossFit-Athlet, Vater und Übungsvariationsguru Markus Philly. Und ich folge Markus schon, seitdem ich gerade mit meiner Bodybuilding-Wettkampfkarriere aufgehört habe. Und ich habe alle seine Übungsinspirationen in mich aufgesogen und er hat durchaus meine jetzige Art zu trainieren beeinflusst. Und Markus hat inzwischen fast 1 Million Follower auf Instagram und über 100.000 Abonnenten bei YouTube und macht wirklich ganz, ganz tollen, hochqualitativen Content. Und letztes Jahr hatte ich schon die Gelegenheit, mit Markus ein privates Gespräch zu führen über Familie, Training und Business. Und ich finde das immer so toll, wenn man sich austauschen kann unter Gleichgesinnten und finde es wirklich beeindruckend, wie ihr alle Säulen irgendwie stemmt. Und daher wollte ich euch gerne daran teilhaben lassen und switche an dieser Stelle zu Englisch, um unseren Gast endlich zu begrüßen. Hi Markus, how are you?
I'm good this morning. It's early over here for me. I know it's an afternoon for you, so we're just getting our day started.
Yes. No, actually it is 10 here. I'm in Ohio. So,
You are. I gotcha.
Yeah, I haven't had breakfast yet. I just had my coffee. Now I have a tea. So it's not so late as in Germany, but you're right there.
Right.
And yeah, so I started my podcast introduction in German. I wanted to tell my listeners about how I came across your account because when I don't know if you really know, but when I was finishing my bodybuilding career, I was searching for something new. I was searching for new movements and I found you on Instagram. So I was just so inspired by all the variations that I can do because I did 4 years of bodybuilding and competing in a national. And then I thought, wow, this is pretty awesome what you're doing. I can stay in my shape. I mean, it was still a goal to stay there. And I can also investigate in new movements. And one of my goals was at that time to reach my first ring muscle up and a handstand, but also to just play around a little and not, you know, just doing bicep curls and bench press and things like that. So that was really inspiring to me. And yeah, I'm so happy and thankful that you can now be here on my podcast so I can show people.
Well, this is this is terrific. Thanks for sharing that kind of the origin stories of how you came across the work that I've been doing for the past few years.
Yes. Yeah, it was really a journey when I think of where I was starting and now I can't even imagine just training in that style. And I'm so glad that I just can show some variations, and you definitely were having an impact on that, you know, style of training. But maybe you can tell us in the beginning a little bit about your career, because I also said in my introduction that you were a CrossFit athlete and now you still do like components of CrossFit, but what was your athletic career? Have you had any other sports background, and how was this route going for you?
Sure. Yeah, well, I definitely had a sports background from really young. That was sort of where I poured my energy and time as a young kid, was into sports. I didn't have a lot of like artistic hobbies or musical hobbies or anything else other than sports and academics. Those were two things that I really worked hard at. And I liked both of them. I really loved certain sports. Soccer was like a primary sport for me growing up. And so was golf. Golf was something my dad did that I kind of fell in love with at an early age, just getting a chance to play with him on the golf course. It felt really, you know, special to get to, you know, do something that was sort of like it was kind of like a grown-up sport. You know, there weren't a lot of kids my age playing. I got to spend, you know, long hours with him on the golf course. And we were fortunate to kind of grow up in an area that we spent time at a home, you know, for a portion of the year every year that was like right on a golf course. So you walk out the backyard and you're on the fairway. So those were sort of my like youth sports, and soccer was very, connected me to my physicality. And I don't know when I started to be aware that there was like this possibility to train my body to be more fit, not just get better at soccer, but be more muscular, be more, so stronger, faster. But that started at an early age too. So golf was like a great sport to learn mental, discipline, focus, and it was not a very physical sport, although physicality helped me over the years. And then soccer was a place where I really got to channel, a passion for fitness, for conditioning, for strength, agility, coordination. And those two laid a great foundation for me to like have strong legs and strong upper body. And then I got into weight training when I was 14 years old. So I went to a gym because I wanted to have bigger muscles and I wanted to, channel some of my athletic energy after practice was over. And, a few of my friends started to get into weight training. My brother was a little bit into weight training, so we just started doing that. So, I didn't really pick up CrossFit until I was, I don't think I even became aware of CrossFit until I was 21, maybe 22 years old. So I had about 8 years of really good resistance training under my belt. And that varied, it ranged from all different types of approaches to training and resistance training. I had even started to learn Olympic lifts when I was in college playing collegiate soccer. So I arrived at CrossFit with a better than what most people arrive at the sport or at the fitness methodology at that time with, which was, 8 years of lifting background and lots of, bodybuilding reps, lots of learning how to mu isolate muscles, how to contract muscles, how to flex muscles, how to go to failure, how to deal with soreness, basically like learning how to push myself before CrossFit was ever there. And that helped me arrive at, 21 years old, step into a whole new world of fitness, and then, have success as an athlete, but really take all of the experience that I had in CrossFit and sort of embrace it as a coach and as somebody who's thinking about fitness for, close to a decade at that point. So a decade of fitness before CrossFit, a decade of fitness with CrossFit, marry all those things together, and that sort of helps me be who I am today as a thinker within this fitness space.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And it's funny, I never would have thought that you would have played golf, for example. But it's so interesting and it's so helpful, I guess, too, for other people to see this journey that it's not like you just started that and look like that, because a lot of people are very impressed by that. And you had a like whole background and how you found your way. And so many people are still searching for it and try themselves a little bit out in different areas. And it's the same a little bit for me. I still think I'm investigating, but yeah, I just love that journey and I love your concept now. And what was actually leading you towards this functional bodybuilding concept? So were you saying, all right, this is now what I want to do. This is my philosophy, basically.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's one that sort of I've told a number of different ways. The way I'll tell it today is that I think when I was an early on training, in my teenage years, it was sort of just like, I think as a 15, 16, 17-year-old male who's in the gym, there's almost, you can obviously make training mistakes. And you can do some of the wrong stuff, but you're pretty resilient and you're pretty capable of just handling a lot of stuff. And most kids at that age are not training properly, but they're still seeing results because there's a lot of testosterone, they're very resilient, and there's kind of beginner gains, so to speak.
Honeymoon phase, I always say.
Exactly, right? But then at some point it became really clear to me, and this is probably in college. It's like the first time I started really applying appropriate training methods with nutrition for specific outcomes. It's sort of like seeing like, hey, I'm out of the honeymoon phase, but now I can apply really good training principles and be thoughtful, and I can see results. And it was sort of like my first experience with that. And I was training with another individual who was much more knowledgeable than me at the time about nutrition and training. And so I was learning a lot from him. And he had a business partner in this like startup nutrition company who I got to meet, and I certainly got to see. And he was like probably 10, 15 years older than us. I think he was, actually, he might have been 20. He was like close to 40 years old. And this guy looked amazing. You know, he was like well built, like, you know, just good muscularity, like really clear skin, just like handsome guy, and was like, you know, and I would always ask my friend, I was like, hey, what's his, you know, like we're trying to dissect, like, what's this guy's secret? And he was like, well, and we both arrived at this, like, well, he's not doing anything crazy. He's just doing this, a lot of the same consistent stuff. He's been doing it for 20 years and he's been eating like this. Like this was, he was, you know, at the time it was like eating whole grains, vegetables, protein, quality fats, like just, you know, a really balanced diet. And he had been eating like no processed stuff, no sugar, no nothing for like two decades. And he was like, yeah, I think it's just like great training principles, you know, consistently with like good diet. And if you do it long enough, you just like look amazing. And I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Like, how do I, okay, that's my mission, you know, is how do I become this guy, Chris, who had been doing it for 20 years. And I got all this time ahead of me. Now with that, you know, it's like, okay, well, I could go for a walk every day and, you know, eat this kind of diet. And that might be the most, that might be consistent, but it's not going to get, it's not going to scratch that itch of like, I want to push myself physically. I have this desire to push myself as a physical person. I want to see what I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, how do I get 5 more pounds in the bar? How do I, you know, many of those variables of like improved performance do equate to better aesthetics, you know, better performance outcomes. Like there's a correlation there. It's like, if you can lift more weight, more repetitions, like you're likely going to build more muscle. So I wasn't at a point in my life where I was like, I'm not chasing heavier weights. I was like, I'm chasing all of this stuff. I want to push myself physically, and I want to be doing it for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. And of course I'm like 18, 19, 20 years old, and I think I can do everything. And, you know, I can diet hard, and I could do more volume in the gym. Mm. I could cut calories, and I can get shredded, and I can push weights and PR. And everything was going swimmingly, you know? Mm. And then I was 20 or 21 years old, and I had my first kind of major injury where I didn't get injured on the soccer field. I didn't get injured doing something. I had an overtraining, you know, from the gym injury, where my, you know, left side SI joint, or, you know, lumbar sacral area of my back had significant pain. I had radicular symptoms, so like nerve pain down my leg, and I basically had like a pretty severe back injury. And there wasn't a single moment. I remember a day of training. I remember there was like, you know, in the last month before my injury, you know, I would do like a big leg day or a big lower body day, and my like low back would kind of get hot, you know, and I'd feel like, ah, oh, it's a little tight, you know. But this was like, I remember this day where it was just like, it was a whole new feeling. It was like something had given out. It was like weak. It was vulnerable. Like I was laid up on the couch, and, you know, when that happened, it led to a big cascade of like downward stuff for me, like injury, can't train, you know, I was in the middle of winter in college on a tough semester of school. I started to see this thing that was like this anchor point of my life that added so much positivity become this source of like negativity, like depression, pain, you know, physical pain, emotional pain, and it just was sort of evaporated, taken away. And that was really like, I mean, it was at the time, it sent me into a deep depression, and that lasted for quite some time. And so that was probably from the time I was 14 years old until today, the longest period of time that I had fallen out of like healthy lifestyle movement practices. And when, after about 6 months, I had done minimal training. I had graduated finally from college. I was kind of directionless in a way. I knew I wasn't ready for graduate school, but I also was like kind of depressed because like my body didn't look anything like it did 6 months ago. Jack shredded, feeling amazing. Now I was soft, lost weight, felt like out of shape, and I knew I wanted to reconnect with that feeling, but I was like, I can't do it the way I did before. Seriously, like I'm not invincible. I didn't have the right approach. I was trying to push it too much, and I lost something in the process. And so that sort of set the stage for like the future, where it was like, okay, I want to, there's back to like what I had said before, which is like, what leads to lifelong sustainability and consistency in this, healthy eating, movement, balance, and then also like be mindful of like that desire to push myself. Where does that like, how do I scratch that itch without overdoing it? And that kind of became like the lifelong mission, was to kind of solve that puzzle. And I don't know that that's, I certainly haven't solved it. It's still something that I juggle. And I think every person that gets into a movement practice, has to balance that. It's like, okay, what's sustainable? This is sustainable, but it's not creating the adaptation that I want. So I have to push it, or I have to challenge myself, or I have to give more effort. Oh, I pushed it too hard, and now I'm sidelined with an injury. And there was, of course, a couple of years went by where I didn't have, I sort of like regained some of my drive, my motivation, my consistency. And then I found CrossFit. And I found CrossFit at a time where I was very healthy. I was pretty healed. Like I was starting to feel so much better, and I had kind of recovered from my back injury. I was building my strength back, and all of that with the help of some, coaches that I had along the way that were not CrossFit coaches. And so now here I am. I'm like, okay, I have my life back, my foundation back, and I want to dive into training hard again. And CrossFit like hit at the right time. And so, as happens with so many people in CrossFit, it's like you get swept up by it, and then next thing you know, it's like I'm overtraining again. I'm having setbacks from CrossFit because it just demands so much intensity, and it breeds that like competitive fire within somebody like myself. And so over the course of the next 6 to 8, or really 6 to 7 years, I started to compete in the sport of CrossFit, and I learned a lot more lessons. I had the things that knocked me down. I had to build myself back up. I learned so much more about burnout, about overtraining, about under calorie, over calorie, nourishing, proper recovery. And so CrossFit was this great learning place for me to take this lesson from my early 20s, which really changed the landscape of my life, and then put it into practice again now with more knowledge and more time to devote to really thinking about it critically, being a little bit more mature and being a little bit older. And so, I did that, and then, and then I made a conscious decision to just say, okay, well, I'm going to compete in this sport at the world class level. And so I'm making a choice to do something that's unsustainable. I know this is not sustainable, but I'm still able to do it happily and enjoy the rest of my life. And then in 2016, the balance just shifted, and it was like, okay, I'm doing as good as I can in this sport. I'm 12th in the world, fittest, whatever, but it's not sustainable, and I'm not enjoying the rest of my life as much anymore. Things are getting too complicated, and I can see that it's time to take a step back. And once I took a step back, I always knew that like my focus was going to shift very, very heavily to answering that question from my early 20s, which was, you know, how do I become that guy, Chris, who looked amazing, you know, from doing 20 years of the right stuff. And I knew that what I had done in 2016 to become the 12th fittest, I was not going to be doing for 20 more years just like that. I needed to reassess and redefine that. And this is this return to that pursuit of understanding what is the balance between giving effort and being sustainable is what functional bodybuilding is really about. You know, a lot of our taglines align with that. How do you become built, not burnt? How do you look good and move well? And so what that tagline is about is, like, so many people in an effort to look good adopt very unsustainable practices. I'm gonna calorie deficit like crazy. I'm gonna train super hard. I'm gonna get there in 3 months. But the move well portion of it is sort of the part where it's like, you know, in order to look good, we often give something up. But I want to look good, and I want to have that other thing of moving well or being vital, you know, like, and look good could mean, like, I want to improve my numbers. I want to improve my body composition. I want to be healthier. I want to do whatever. I want this, but don't sacrifice this. You know, it's like, we don't sacrifice. And so that's really what underlies the look good, move well concept. It's like, you know, and so many people resonate with it because they're like, oh yeah, like, I dieted hard for 3 months, looked great, but I felt like shit, or I, you know, it wasn't sustainable. I didn't hold on to that. And now I don't like the way I look, and I gained all my weight back and so forth. So I know it's a super long winded answer to your question, but it really takes you from the beginning of, like, where was the first major obstacle in my life, you know, that I ran into in pursuit of a goal, and the goal being, how do I become Chris, you know, 20 years from now and look amazing and jacked and feeling vital and feeling great in my body? Oh, you got to connect the dots for 20 years with consistency and put in enough effort to see, you know, to see change.
Yes. Thank you so much. And no, I love long and detailed answers. I love that what you were just saying, and I'm so glad that you had Chris as a, yeah, like a role model or someone to look up to and hold on to when you were in these struggling times, that gave you a little future perspective on what you really want and what is in the end also healthy additionally. And let's say this, I always think something happens for a reason, or, you know, at least I want to see the positive side of it. And your injury, let's say it didn't happen and you were going into CrossFit and you were training hard, didn't have the perspective of, you know, being careful and things like that, and then you would have gotten injured within CrossFit, maybe even more, maybe something that is not even to recover from now, whatever it could be. So let's take it as a positive thing that happened to give you this perspective, of course, that was forming your philosophy now. So I love that totally. And yeah, it's something that I can also identify with so much, doing bodybuilding, which is different, but also in the sense that I did it not sustainable, because I can't run around as a woman, at least, with 6% body fat and, you know, things like that, and training at this amount that I used to do. So yeah, movement and just being healthy, that's exactly what I would say is my goal as well, and what I want to inspire people for. So thank you for sharing that. And when you stopped competing and were on your quest to find functional bodybuilding and your philosophy, were you having like feelings like, ah, I missed something out and I wish I could compete? Or did you feel like pressure, or did you just miss competing in general?
No, I think the reality is that, like, as a CrossFit athlete, I never loved, I was never somebody who loved the competition days. I didn't love the competition weekends. I loved the training and the dedication to, you know, becoming better at the sport. So my happiest times of year were, like, you know, really in the off season, when we were not you know, there was no competition on the horizon, or, you know, when right after the CrossFit Open was over and there was 2 months to regionals and I had qualified for regionals and I was like, great, the next 5 weeks are going to be super fun. You know, I love it. I'm going to love training for it. But then as regionals got closer, it was like, ugh, I don't love this anymore. And then maybe the happiest time of year was I just qualified for the CrossFit Games. I've got 2 months this summer to train in preparation, and there's no pressure right now. I just did something successful, and so that was always such a fun time. And then the games would be a week or two away, and anxiety and the, you know, just fear and all this stuff would come up. And so I didn't miss competing. I wasn't like dying to like get back into that stressful, anxious space of, you know, am I good enough? I need to be doing more. You know, how am I going to like keep up with my competitors? What happens if I fail? What happens if, you know, am I going to finally be like, you know, discovered as a phony, like whatever it might be. But, you know, when I was training for CrossFit as a sport, like I was, you know, working. I was a professional coach and I owned a gym. So it wasn't as if I had no responsibilities. I mean, I had to like show up and work, but it felt so aligned with my practice of being an athlete and training. I had a, you know, girlfriend at the time who then became my fiance, but we hadn't, you know, really started a full life together. We were both still exploring who we were, and I had like kind of low responsibilities outside of that. So I could dedicate so much to being an athlete, and I made it that way. That was always my like, you know, so I appreciated that lifestyle so much. And when I retired, you know, from CrossFit, like it was the start of a lot more responsibility in my life, which was something that I welcomed and was like a new challenge, you know, being a husband, being a father, being a business owner, a different type of business owner than I had been previously. So when I was no longer competing, there were times where I longed for the days where I could dedicate to my fitness the way I did when I competed. You know, training 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day, you know, it was hard, it was challenging, but I had all the time and the space in my life to do it. And that felt good, you know, I missed that, you know, to transition to like, hey, can I get a good 90-minute session in today? Like, that's a blessing. You know, that started to feel like, oh man, I miss being able to like, and I've heard like athletes, specifically I've heard Lance Armstrong say this. It's like, do you miss, you know, cycling? It's like, I miss being in that kind of shape. I miss being that fit, right? Like PEDs, steroids, drugs aside, like, you know, when he was winning the Tour de France, he was in the most exceptional, you know, level of aerobic fitness on the planet for somebody in his sport. And, you know, when you feel that way, you feel at times you feel kind of invincible. It's like you could do everything, anything. And, you know, when I knew I could wake up and go to the gym and clean up 350 pounds and, you know, snatch 265, like without even blinking an eye, it's like, that's just a, you know, that's just a Tuesday, and do 20 muscle ups unbroken and row a 2K in under 7 minutes. Like all that was like, yeah, I miss that. But to achieve that meant a lot of time, dedication, consistency, hard work, effort. And, you know, at stages of our life, we stop having the ability to do those things. And this is also a big message that I teach a lot and preach a lot in functional bodybuilding, is that, you know, your life is not going to look the same every year, every decade. Like, things are going to change. Right now, it's a busy time of life. You know, there's fewer opportunities and windows to really, you know, maybe express myself physically or take time, downtime for this or reading, or, you know, there's a lot of time with my kids and with the family and working on the business. And so we have to find what we are capable of doing inside the confines of our life now. If I consistently long for the days when I was competing because I could wake up at 8 o'clock and, you know, as opposed to 4:30 or 5 in the morning when my kids wake up, like, you know, I'm just going to be stuck in this, like, living in the past kind of mentality, which doesn't serve us. It doesn't help us achieve the goals that we may have today of how we want to feel physically and mentally and emotionally. So you'll know this about me. I don't give a lot of very simple answers when you ask questions. Hey, do you miss competing? Did you ever like, well, let me tell you a 10-minute story. That's kind of how I go. So I'll stop there.
No, it's very good. And I like these insights and these little thoughts that you have, because this is showing what you really felt and how it really is. So I love that you're so real and offering that. And you always highlight the importance of being consistent. And I think this is, yeah, if somebody wishes for something, this is the only way to go when you want to hold this for a long time, which actually everybody wants. So everybody wants to have a healthy and a nice looking body, more or less. So that's just what it takes. And so I love that you teach that you say, what can you repeat every day and not what can you do maybe once per week or every 2 weeks for one day. This is so important because our body, if it's performance based or if it's aesthetic based, it needs accumulation of something to build muscle, to lose fat, to gain strength. So if you do not accumulate something, reps in your training, the nutrients that you put in your body, nothing would change, because our body won't change in one day. It just, this is just how it works. So a lot of people are very impressed by how lean you mm-hmm. are, how your physique looks like. And they think, okay, how is he eating? How can he stay so lean and eat so many calories too? Sure. And this is actually what is the result of your lifestyle. Yeah. And maybe you can explain
sure,
that.
Okay. Yeah, well, maybe two different approach that two different ways. But the first way, I'll just take a little bit of a spin off of something you just said, which is, the concept of accumulating reps. And I love that people like set daily goals for themselves. It's like, hey, my goal is to walk 10,000 steps today. But what maybe is a better way of looking at it is like, how many steps did you walk in the year 2021? Not today. Cause like I can walk 10,000 steps today if I really set my mind to it. But if that is like too hard for me and that's too much of a stretch for today, then tomorrow I might just say like, shit, I can't make 10,000. So I'm going to hit the fuck it button and I'm not going to walk anything. I'm only going to get 1,000, and then the next day, okay, I'll try again and I go for 10,000, but I only get 7. And the next day I'm like, fuck it. And 2 days go by and I don't even try. And then I try again. And at the end of the week, I average 3,000 steps a day. What if you had approached it with like, I'm going to do 5,000 steps each day. First day, success. Great. Second day, success. Third day, I'm feeling good. And you're just motivated because you're just winning every day. You're hitting your goal. You're hitting something that's reasonable. End of the week, you had 7 days, 5,000 a day, 35,000 steps versus the person who only got 21,000 steps. And so it's like, what if you spread that out over a year, right? So the path to long-term success and consistency is really finding the sweet spot of, hey, what can I do today, every single day, really be consistent? And then once you connect the dots of enough wins in a row, then you can level up a little bit, level up. And this is my process, is what I talked about before, is like finding what's consistent, but also that challenges me. So if I do the same thing for a month and I'm consistent, then in month two, I'm going to likely want to push it a little bit more, see what I'm capable of. And then month two goes by, great, I did fine, push it a little bit more. Month three, great, push it a little bit more. Month four, about halfway through the month, I stopped being consistent. I had a little setback. Something wasn't working. Got to have awareness and recognize that, hey, that month three was kind of my sweet spot. I got to maybe regress to that because month four, I pushed it too much and that derailed my progress. And so that helps us to, see, because at the end of the year, I want to accumulate the most quality reps. I want to accumulate the most reps with effort and, you know, high RPE, rate of perceived exertion. I want to accumulate the most high quality, high density nutrients possible, right? And getting into that mindset of like, what get, you know, if I can do the most over the course of a year or over the course of a decade or over the course of 2 decades, like Chris, I mentioned earlier, that's how I develop this phenomenal, you know, or this physique or this body or this performance ability that most people are like, whoa, that's incredible. But to Chris, it just looked like doing a lot of the same stuff for 20 years. And for me, that's kind of what it's felt like. Now, granted, there were pockets of time in there where I did some very extraordinary effort, you know, to become one of the fittest on the planet. And I think that that helped build some of my physique, no question about it. But it didn't sustain my physique, and it won't sustain my physique. You know, you had a great year in 2021. Well, in 2030, that 1 year is not going to be the difference maker in how you feel and look when you're 20, you know, and, you know, 9 years later. You have to have strung together consistency. So I think that's one way that I explain, you know, the, how am I, where am I, you know, I think I get the question quite often on, you know, social media, hey, how long have you been training? Or actually somebody today asked me like, hey, what did you look like before you started all this? And I was like, I looked like I was 14, because that's when I started all of it. You know, like, I mean, that was 23 years ago. Yeah, 37 now. Yeah. So it's like, okay, well, you can't even compare. It's like, there's no starting point, because it's just been this slow, steady change over time. And I didn't have selfies every single month for the last 27 years. I wish I did, because it would help people, or 23 years, it would help people really see. But then the next part you mentioned, which is like, you know, I on the one hand, I expose as much of what I really do in a given day to people so that they can have, you know, a very honest, you know, window into my life, and they can start to see, okay, this is what it takes. But I do that thoughtfully and cautiously, because you know this, like, if, hey, this is what I'm doing this week or today, you know, 100 people are going to go out and copy that exactly. They're going to go eat the same exact thing. They're going to go and try and do the exact same workout, and it might not be appropriate for them. You know, people see like, oh man, you ate 3,700, 4,000 calories today. Like, how do you have such high calorie and be so ripped? Like, if I ate that much food, I would like be overfed. I'd feel, you know, I'd gain weight in a bad way. And I'm like, you're probably right. You know, like, my current level of like nutrient intake and how much I burn in a day is the product of a lot of, you know, time, effort, energy, consistency, and sort of what we'll call it, building up my metabolism, right? Like, you know, we're designed to be in homeostasis. So it's like, if you start at, you know, 2000 calories, you know, and then you're an active person and you're training, and, you know, the next week you add 100 calories for that week and the week after, and then, you know, next week after that, you add another 100 calories. So you're like adding 3 to 5% of energy per week. You know, that's not going to just suddenly turn into fat or muscle. It's like, in most cases, you're going to just become a little bit more active. You're going to have a bit more energy. You're maybe, if you're choosing the right foods, then now you're digesting foods and assimilating nutrients better. You're excreting, you know, your excretion and your elimination becomes a lot more efficient. You are now like, you have more activity throughout your day. So that non-exercise activity, thermogenesis, neat, what people talk about, you push it harder in training. So you expend more energy in training, you know, so it's like, with more food comes the opportunity to do more. And some people don't have that ability to do more in their day because they're stuck at a desk. They're very sedentary. But in the case that you do have that, then guess what? Like, more energy equates to more effort and more activity and potentially more energy burn. And so being thoughtful about how you do that and like building it up over time and sort of being aware of how much you're having, that's a very, you know, It's a very easy recipe to figure out. What I like to with people is, what is the most amount of food that you can eat in a day, and explore the most amount of movement that you can in a day that doesn't impact your life negatively or make you hurt. And then how do we over time just keep that, you know, as high as possible? Because the race to the bottom is a losing battle. You know, how do I cut the most amount of calories possible? How do I, because eventually once you cut calories, all of your non-exercise activity, thermogenesis goes down. Your energy goes down. You start to become more sedentary. You start to become, you know, even your cognitive function starts to decrease. Like, you just start to become like a person who doesn't want to do anything because you're constantly underfed. And your body's like, whoa, we're like wasting away, so I want to just stop moving. And that's not a life I decided I wanted to lead, right? I tried calorie restricting and dieting way down. And I always tried to push my fitness even harder throughout those periods. And that was a recipe for disaster. It's like, I wanted to keep moving. If I move more, I'm going to feel better. And if I can't do that on a calorie restriction for very long. So I have to maintain great amount of fuel. And the other concept that I had that really has stuck with me over the years is, like, when we eat food, that becomes who we are, right? So, like, you know, the actual amino acids, the, you know, cellular components, the macronutrients, the cofactors, all the things that you're found in the food that you eat, you know, fatty acids, this becomes the building blocks of your cells and your structure, right? Like, the cellular membranes of our body, like, are made of cholesterol and fatty acids. So the fatty acids and the cholesterol that we eat is what ultimately becomes the building blocks of our cellular structure. And so, like, if we want to build a very, you know, strong, athletic looking, muscular, you know, well-built structure, then we have to eat good quality food and give us the stimulus. And if I can eat more food and give more stimulus, then that creates this remodeling process in the body that happens more, you know, more frequently, more often. And therefore, back to the Chris example, is like, well, he trained hard and he, you know, ate right for a long time. And now he's got this clear skin. He's got this great build. He's got great muscle attachments. He's got good, you know, hair. He's got, you know, whatever. He's got all this stuff that looks really attractive. And it's like, well, it's a product of just feeding, you know, you're feeding the body the right ingredients. You're giving it the right amount of stimulus, and together that's going to form this person that we are. And so I always saw, like, the most rapid body composition changes, body recomposition, was not like when you dieted way down and then you, started training more. It was actually like when you trained and moved more and fed the body more. It's like, watch me increase your calories and you're going to get more lean. And people feel it and they experience it all the time because they add a little bit of calories, they increase their protein, they increase their movement, and the combination leads to dramatic physique change. So those, you know, that's kind of several different principles of, like, okay, don't look at it one day or one week at a time. Look at it in 1 year. How many steps did you get in a year? Don't shoot for 10,000 today if it means you're going to get 1,000 tomorrow. Aim for 5,000, right? Yeah. And then over time, you can kind of build that up. The second principle is, like, you know, eat more, move more. If you eat more, you'll be able to move more. If you move more, you know, then you can, then the combination of assimilating those nutrients into your body will lead to, you know, more pronounced body composition or physique changes that people are looking for. And that your amount of energy that you need to be, like, to be lean is not as simple as, like, well, you have to eat under 2000 calories to get lean. You can do it another way. And this, you know, will be different for each person. But if you're stuck in this concept of, I just need to calorie restrict, you likely won't lead a very, you know, long, you won't have a long sustained period of of consistently looking and feeling the way you want to feel, you'll burn out on that.
Thank you for explaining it so well. And thank you for sharing that it's not bad to add calories, that your metabolism actually will adapt to a faster or more efficient state. And this is also, especially for women, which I work a lot with, very scary to add calories. And, you know, they feel fat immediately, but it's not when you do kind of a reverse diet style where you're just adding slowly. You know, it's not like we add like 1,000 or 2,000 calories the second day. It is a slow process where your body is able then also to adapt to it, and your need goes up automatically, and you don't even feel that because your need, and my listeners know a little bit about that because I talk a lot in German about it, but it's the calories you burn through everything that's not exercise based, like mimic, gesture, walking. So when you are eating more, when you're out of a deficit, let's say that, then your body is more likely to make, you know, a lot of gesture, and you are more energetic in your, in everything you're doing, basically. So you burn more calories without even noticing it. So yeah, thank you for sharing that insight. And I like that you explain it with this scientific background and not, I mean, you could just say, yeah, I have, I don't know, 6% body fat, and this is only through this program. So you just explain it very well, and you take your time, and you do this YouTube videos about it. And I appreciate that a lot, because I see a lot of other influencers or fitness people that inspire other people and that are not, you know, so
thank you for saying that. And, yeah, I mean, it's that's been a, I think another important mission of mine has been, I was a young training, or I was a, as a younger person, younger adult, I wanted to know, like, I quickly fell out of love with this, like, sensationalized approach to getting the body I wanted that was going to be fast and quick. I adopted this, like, I'm ready to work for a long time. Like, I want to put in work. I want to show up every day and just, like, so just don't give me the quick fix. Don't give me the bullshit. Just teach me what I need to do for a long time. And I suppose I thought that was going to be a simple answer, but I've come to learn that that's complicated, because in order to know what to do for a long time, you have to know what you should be doing at various stages of your life. If you want to be consistent for 30 years, you're going to have to be consistent across three different decades. And in those three decades of life, your lifestyle is going to change dramatically. Your body is going to change. The people in your life, the place that you live, for most people, like what you do for work, like all of that's going to likely change. And therefore, what you should be doing for consistency in training and nutrition and health and longevity will also change. You have to just be, like, constantly in pursuit and able to adapt and pivot and change and be self-awareness. So I was that person that wanted those answers early on. And I think if I had stumbled across my YouTube page when I was, you know, 18, 19 years old, or my Instagram page, I would have just been like, yes, somebody's finally just, like, helping break it down. And I would have just, like, picked apart every little part of, you know, every YouTube video and gone and just right to the gym, like that. And so that's what I'm, you know, I'm not trying to, like, my ideal person that watches my videos is not like 18-year-old Marcus. It's anybody that's like, I want to learn, and I want to kind of create this bank of knowledge that is going to help me navigate life, all the different circumstances that life might throw at me, and navigate it with the goal of, let's keep doing this for a long time and make movement and consuming food a recipe for creating the best life that I possibly could have.
I love that. And if you have time, maybe one final question: how does your current routine daily routine look like with meal prep and eating and training? So how long do you train? Yeah. How often?
Yeah, my current routine is, I work from home 3 out of the 5 days of the week. And when I'm at home, I don't meal prep. I just take breaks to go and have meals. And I prepare my food at those moments. Mm-hmm. When I go to the gym, I'll pack, 2, maybe 3 of my meals of the day. And that means, cooking a little bit of food in the morning and, getting things packed up in my cooler. And then, 4 days a week, I train, like a full functional bodybuilding training session in the gym. And then sometimes a 5th day of the week, I also do that. And a full functional bodybuilding session is following one of my Persist training tracks. So Persist is my online program. And I pick one of the workouts that sort of suits what I, how I'm feeling for a particular period of time. And then every day, in addition to that, I will do, 30 to 40 minutes of what I call cardio, but it's just like, it's simple, not super challenging movement. From time to time, I make that a little bit more intense, but, it could be going for a walk. This morning before we got on this call, I just got on the rowing machine for 30 minutes and just nice and easy, nothing strenuous. I listened to a podcast. So I just like, I like to just have a little bit of regular movement like that in my day. And it's not like a set schedule. Some days I work out at 9 a.m. Some days I work out at 1 p.m. I try and time it like before a meal of the day. I don't like to work out right after meals. And then lastly, I have kids. So they wake up and I'm with them in the mornings and, they need to get picked up from school and I'm with them in the evenings. And so my days are kind of bookended with kid activity and child care. And that's sort of how I define windows of time for myself for, movement practice and when we can cook and have meals and things like that.
Yeah. That shows that your program is also very suitable with, work and having kids and all of that. So I definitely put your programs in the description box of this podcast so that my German community can check it out. So I have so many more questions that I would have liked to ask you, but I know you have a busy schedule and I appreciate that you had this hour for me. So thank you, Marcus, so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for your questions. And I'm glad we had an opportunity to do this.
Yes, me too.